my recording man. You know what I mean?
I can 46 Beijing, April 9th, 11 a.m., Function Room 2, CCNSO Members Meeting, Part 2.
Excellent. Thank you. Right. Welcome back, everybody. If I could encourage you to get a seat, and thank you very much for the doors. We have Kim and Elise back once again for the IANA update. Over to you.
Hello. I'm Elise. He's Kim. And this is the Kim and Elise show. We're going to tag team. So to start us off, I guess I have to move this along. Our agenda to discuss with you all today are contractual reviews. By that I mean the NTIA IANA functions contractual reviews that and the deliverables that we have. Then business excellence. It'll be just a kind of a promotional bit for the EFQM business excellence that we do within the IANA functions. And finally, our preparations, the IANA functions preparations for new GTLD delegations. And so those are our three primary topics today. So in relation to contractual reviews, our contract with NTIA was renewed. I guess it's a new contract as of October 1st, 2012. And in that, if you've all read the multiple pages of it, there are some deliverables, and those deliverables include a large number of public consultations. And we've had several of those public consultations up for public comment, and I want to thank the CCNSO for their thoughtful comments to some of those, and we wanted to report on that as well as some of the upcoming consultations that we have coming. So I know this is an eye chart. Basically, it's just a snapshot from the IANA website, and it shows that there were six public consultations up for review. Many of those have now closed. So this one should be a little more legible. So one of the public consultations is about a root zone KSK rollover. And I don't know if actually the CCNSO was aware of this one. So this is something that is out for public consultation, as you know. The IANA functions signed the root zone in 2011, I think it was. I may be off a little bit. But so part of that agreement with NTIA and the community was that there would be a key rollover within 5 years of signing the route. So it wasn't 2011, it was 2010. And we're getting close to 5 years, so we need to start thinking about what is it and how should it be done and what the community thinks about it, because obviously you all have TLDs, and if the root zone is signed and we do a rollover and something doesn't go quite smoothly, you'd want to know about it in advance. So of course it's going to go smoothly, but we would like input on the preparations for a KSK rollover. And so we do hope that the CCNSO and maybe individual TLDs will also look at this consultation document and make some comments so that it can help us be better informed on how to plan and go forward with this. One of the other consultations which has closed is the customer service complaint resolution process. And we did receive some very thoughtful and meaningful comments from the CCNSO, and we certainly appreciate your input. We did get comments from five different organizations or individuals. I've posted some of the key inputs that we did receive. And one of the ones that I think surprised us the most was that there was no awareness that the IANA functions do have an escalation process. And it was an escalation process that was developed with the community back in, I think, 2005. Is that correct, Kim? 2006, excuse me. I'm 1 year off on everything today. So in 2006, and so we were a bit surprised that people didn't realize that already existed, but we certainly take the point that we do need to raise awareness that there is a process for raising concerns and complaints for the IANA functions. An additional consultation which has concluded is about performance standards for CCTLD delegation and redelegations. And again, we appreciate the comments that we did receive from the CCNSO as an organization or a supporting organization, and we did receive a total of 7 comments. Those inputs are being reviewed, and this is a build. So basically, this is just kind of a summary of a few of those. There will be an analysis and a report of both this consultation and the input that we received published within the next couple of weeks. And so you'll be able to then get more information. Of course, all the comments are publicly available online, and you can go to the ICANN website to these consultations, and you can see what everyone said. So one of these, the issue here was we had proposed some KPIs or timelines for addressing. Oh, did I go forward too far? Sorry. I meant to be here. I went to the wrong slide. One of them was the statistics for performance of, how did I get way up there? Did I touch it too fast?
I think it's further along.
Nope, sorry. I have a fast finger, I guess, today. I do apologize for that. I'm still talking about CCTLDs. And one of the comments about the statistics was that we had proposed starting to measure how long it takes for delegations and redelegations, and there appeared to be support for that measurement. However, there was also support for not making it a KPI, because there was some many comments that came in that said that delegations and redelegations are also often a discussion and a negotiation, and so therefore we probably shouldn't be held to strict KPIs on how long it takes for delegations or redelegations, but that it is important to report how long these things take. So now, getting to GTLDs, there was a similar consultation on what the performance standards should be for delegations and redelegations of GTLDs, and we only received one comment. And this was about the statistics. And you can see there's a thread here. These are all performance standards. So we did delegation and redelegation performance standards consultations for CCTLDs, GTLDs, as well as the Internet number resources. And we had fewer comments on Internet number resources and some significant ones, and as I said, we will be publishing the analysis of these reports and within the next couple of weeks, and they should be available for review. Finally, another consultation was the secure notification process, and this is about how we notify you all and others about communications of all types. And so we had two key comments, and we again thank you for comments. Finally, we have some upcoming consultations. So I hate to bore you to tears with all these public comments, but they are important for us to try and understand what makes sense to the community, and then we can implement that. So this first one is about user documentation, and I hope this is near and dear to your hearts. We've been receiving comments over many years that the documentation we have for applying for delegations or redelegations is insufficient, and I know that the CCNSO has a framework of interpretation working group going on at this time. However, this user documentation would address what we do currently until we get more clarification from you after you've closed your framework of interpretation. This user documentation will also come out with documentation, as you can see in the second one, for the sources of policies and procedures that the user documentation is based upon. And finally, we'll be doing some consultations about what dashboards you'd like to see published. It's kind of related to performance standards. In fact, it's not kind of. It is related to performance standards and how they should be published from a high-level kind of executive summary view, what the dashboard view should be for performance standards and the activities that we take care of. That basically concludes the types of consultations that we have undertaken and have coming up. And we really do want to encourage the CCNSO, as you have in for the current ones, to continue to offer your input. We certainly find it very, very valuable and helpful. And you as individual CCs or TLD operators, we also encourage if you have your own opinion that you'd like to share independently, we welcome that also. So now on to the business excellence. This is only one slide, so it's real fast. Basically, we started the EFQM Business Excellence in 2010. We've had four self-assessments based on the EFQM model. And for those of you that don't know, that's a European quality management model. And the arrow is going up and to the right because that's the way our self-assessments have gone once we've been measured at the end of each year using this measurement system that's quite formalized and standardized. In fact, in 2012, we had a really big jump. We went from about a 40 to 50% improvement in three or four different areas of our performance and quality management. We made another jump in 2012, not quite as 2013, not quite as large. And this year, we're preparing to do an external self-assessment. Now, the EFQM self-assessments that we have done have been focused on the IANA department, not as the entire ICANN organization. ICANN has decided to adopt the EFQM model to start deploying this further throughout its organization as a whole. I guess we've been a successful pilot, much like the IDN Fast Track was a successful pilot, and we were the kind of learning stage. But we did want to let you know that for the IANA department, we will be doing an external self-assessment. It's not self-assessment if it's external. We'll be doing an external assessment using the EFQN model. And I will now tag team to my colleague, Kim. Oh, I could do that, yes. Are there any questions before Kim takes over new GTLD processes?
Okay. Nigel? Christina Gavi, do we have a mic, please?
Just a brief question. You mentioned that you'll adopt the framework of interpretation results once they're finalized. Now, the framework of interpretation is an ongoing thing that's came out of the delegation and redelegation working group and has been on for several years now. And there's some good results already come out of it, and the drafts are already out there. Now, I'm not suggesting that you should immediately seize upon anything that you see in a draft document, but it does strike me that if there are conflicts, if you like, whereby your existing documentation that you're now publishing says or does something in the process of a delegation or redelegation that is completely contrary to the way that the reports and the conclusions of the CCNSO are going. And bear in mind that interpretation is, we haven't written any new policy, we've taken existing policy and construed it. We've gone into some detail with construction of the document. So the existing documents going back to 1996 haven't changed, so they're what you should be operating to now. And if our evolving interpretation is significantly different to the interpretation that you've historically been using, I would suggest that maybe, if that's the case, and I don't know it is, maybe it isn't, but you should be looking at it now rather than when, at the end of the day, we produce ex machina this final report.
So I think that's a good point you're making, that we should take those into consideration as we do put out the public consultation on the user documentation. And within those questions, if there is, like you'd say, a huge discrepancy, and I don't know if there will be or won't be, That might fall naturally in the question piece of the public consultation, where either we've implemented that in our user instructions or we have not, and to ask the questions, how should we go forward for resolving any discrepancies that are between that. But I think the public consultation is a perfect opportunity to try and find the right ground, middle ground, I guess, for the user instructions that are based on what we know as the RFC, as well as the interpretation that is coming out of the CCNSO. And you do have reports, I think, that have been incrementally delivered.
Okay, anyone else? Okay. Kim, over to you.
Thanks. So I think a big part of the work inside our department in the last trimester since we last met has been getting ourselves ready for new GTLDs. Right now we have a little over 300 top-level domains, and all things staying on track, we expect that to be significantly greater moving forward. So we want to be ready to implement new GTLDs, and I'll explain a little bit about what new GTLD readiness steps we've taken. The primary step really relates to the initial delegation. The new GTLD process was explained in quite a lot of detail yesterday in the various sessions devoted to it. But in essence, there's a multi-part evaluation process involving evaluation, extended evaluation, all sorts of things leading up to contracting and pre-delegation testing. Once a particular application has passed that gauntlet of ICANN requirements, it's effectively deemed acceptable. A contract has been entered into with ICANN, and the applicant then needs to come to IANA to execute a delegation process. So this process is the act of actually making the TLD live in the DNS. Historically, we've done probably in the order of 10 GTLD delegations since ICANN was created, essentially the results of the first two new GTLD rounds, the 2000 proof of concept round and the 2004 sponsored TLD round. And the way we did it was relatively ad hoc. We received probably no more than one of those a year. We wrote a comprehensive delegation report, and we did it on a not a regularized approach for those two rounds. We recognize, though, that that is not going to scale. So what we've done is firstly extended our automation system. The automation system we use for RID zone management was deployed about 2 years ago. And when the initial system that we deployed was really focused on ongoing maintenance. There was no provision for going into the system to apply for an initial delegation, alternatively to apply for a redelegation. So we've added delegation support to the automation system. The second thing we've done is we've gotten rid of that narrative approach to the delegation reports. Instead, for new GTLDs, it's going to be a checklist-based approach. The checklist is based on the factors listed in the AGB, the applicant guidebook. In addition, the new IANA contract has some specific requirements that are enumerated, so they'll also be called out in the checklist. The third thing we've done to streamline the process, well, to support the process, I should say, is we've hired an additional staff member working on RID zone management. So in terms of those automation improvements, like I said, delegating new GTLDs, that workflow is now implemented in the RZM system. And the idea there is that we have a smooth handoff from TAS to RZM as well. So there's a system called TAS, for those not aware, the TLD application system. And that guides applicants through the whole application process up to IANA. But at the end of that process, once successfully concluded, there'll be an orderly handoff, an automated handoff between TAS and the RZM system. The way that it will work is successful applicants, once they've fulfilled all the requirements of TAS, will be given a unique token. They simply take that token, go to the IANA website, to the new delegation system, enter that token, and that begins the process at IANA. So that's actually what it looks like, really simple. And then once you do that, you get access to the RZM system that you're all familiar with that you use for your existing CCTLDs. In terms of how that checklist will be filled out, we've been very keen to minimize the amount of work IANA does. We certainly don't want to be a bottleneck, and we don't want to repeat analysis that's already been conducted. So in terms of the new GTLD evaluations, there's already a comprehensive system of panels and reviews being conducted. And while those panels and reviews are being conducted, they're filling out this IANA checklist as they go. So the idea there is once you come to IANA, the checklist is essentially already complete. What IANA will do is do its regular root zone processing. So what IANA does for any root zone change is do IANA-specific technical checks, make sure the admin and tech contact work and are responsive, do a number of other minor checks. But, you know, it's what you know and experience when you do a normal root zone change. In terms of staffing, we've added one more additional root zone management staff member. That brings our team there to three. We have Nadia, Selena, and Paula. We've also, as I mentioned, minimized the amount of effort on a per application basis. You know, really, with a combination of automation and this checklist that's being compiled outside of IANA, the amount of effort needed by IANA staff is really minimal to delegate a new GTLD. We also, you know, we're aware that there might be spikes in the number of new GTLDs being approved, and we want to be timely on all of them. So we've planned our staffing to be flexible. So there's cross-training across our whole department, so other staff that are not necessarily tasked with root zone management will be available to prioritise root zone management tasks. So if there are spikes in demand during the new GTLD processing, that can be catered for. Really, the net takeaway I would have for this is I know there's a lot of uncertainty about how new GTLDs will be processed within IANA, but my advice would be really that our goal here and our intent is that really delegating a new GTLD will be much more akin to a routine root zone change request. The timing, the level of complexity should all be similar to if an existing TLD needs to do a name server update or a contact change. It should be a relatively fast, straightforward process. The key thing here is, unlike with CCTLDs, where you know IANA has a substantial role in reviewing the application, for new GTLDs, the idea here is that all that evaluation has already happened. If you've passed the whole new GTLD application process, IANA has some checks and balances, but in essence, that review has already been conducted. So that's it for my part, and I'm happy to hear any questions on that.
Thank you, Kim. Any questions or comments? Peter?
Thank you, IANA team, for, again, an excellent presentation and overview, as always. Just one question on your preparedness for new GTLDs. I think the obvious question for CCs is, should they expect service delays in the time that new GTLDs are flooding the IANA system?
No. in terms of the automation system, it's really designed to cater for orders of magnitude more requests than actually it receives. So we have no expectation, you know, with the volume of new GTLD applications we know of, that there will be any risk there. I wouldn't expect any noticeable impact.
May I just also add, I don't know if we've ever mentioned this before, but over a year, and the trend has been very steady, we get approximately, on average, one root zone request a day over a year, so maybe 365 total. So what we're looking at is potentially, you know, having maybe five more a day. And so obviously on the ramp up there could be, you know, more in a week than normal. But I think that we have a significant capacity and enough capacity to definitely handle that ramp up. So over time, it shouldn't even impact it, because if it stays to the same model and the same trending that we've seen, which is, you know, one per TLD a day, a year, that should be fine.
Okay. Thanks. And keep up the good work.
We're very reassured. We were reassured. That was the correct answer. Okay. Anyone else? No? In which case, if I can ask Bernie and Keith to come up for the next item and say thank you very much to Elise and Kim. Okay, so we are moving on to the Framework of Interpretation Working Group Uncontested Delegation. And whilst they're coming up, we go straight on from that to the study group on the use of country names and territories and the CCNSO work plan. We're going to try to condense both of those so that we can then come back to the money discussion prior to lunch. Okay. Welcome.
I'm not sure I want to touch that. Good morning, everybody. My name is Keith Davidson, and I'm the chair of the Framework of Interpretation Working Group, and beside me is Bernie Turcott, who's been contracted by ICANN to provide support for this working group. And I see there are a number of people in the room who appear to me to be new to the CCNSO, so for the regular CCNSO attendees, this might be a little bit slower and more boring than usual. But as I try and familiarise some of the people new to the room to the work of this working group. So we have a presentation today. We'll cover off the scope of this framework of interpretation. You've just heard about parts of that during the IANA discussion. We'll talk about the process we're following, the topics that we've identified to interpret, the activities that we've undertaken since ICANN Toronto, the topic of consent, the topic of significantly interested parties, and the topic of revocation. So the scope of the Framework of Interpretation Working Group, the working group formed as a result of the work of the Delegations and Redelegations Working Group, which investigated the delegations and redelegations of country codes that had occurred throughout ICANN's history, during the process of that working group, we identified that there were really only two policies or guidelines that were applicable as accepted policies and guidelines relating to delegations and redelegations. One is RFC 1591. From 1993, and the other is the GATT principles from 2005. The ambition of the framework of interpretation is to add colour and depth to the existing policies and guidelines, so to enable ICANN to interpret the policies more clearly and more concisely, and the outcome of that would be more predictable, more stable decision-making as a result. So the results of delegations and redelegations would be more calculatable. Out of scope for the working group were any changes to applicable policies or guidelines. We couldn't create policy on the fly. We can't invent a policy where there isn't any. All we can do is interpret existing policy. And also out of scope was anything relating to the IANA functions contract, including any contract implementation issues or procedures. Of course, that hasn't prevented members of the working group and other members of the CCNSO being involved in submissions to IANA on aspects of the contract. The process, we divided our work into a number of topics. The working group works to create a draft set of interpretations for a specific topic and release that as an interim report. So there was the consent topic as an interim report. The working group undertakes then a public consultation on that draft set of interpretations. We review the comments and input from that consultation, and we prepare a final report on that topic. The process is that we require both the GAC and the CCNSO to support the final framework. A most important stage. If we weren't going through that process, we probably would only our only methodology would be to actually undertake a policy development process under CCNSO rules. But if the CCNSO and the GAC agree, then the GAC can provide that as advice to the board, and it becomes binding on the board to follow that advice or give reason why they wouldn't follow that advice. So quite a nice tactic to more rapidly get the framework in place. And then the final framework would be submitted to the ICANN board with that approval, hopefully. And of course, there are members of the GAC on the FOI working group who, from time to time, have been very participative, and at times maybe not so much. There are also members of IANA, both Elise and Kim, who were just addressing you in the IANA discussion, are on the working group, and one of them attends virtually every call. So certainly they listen to the recordings and so on. So we have some quality of input from outside of our constituency. As I said, we had the topics for interpretation. The consent topic dealt with issues around what consent might mean, what informed consent might comprise of, what are the processes that IANA might take to evaluate that consent was properly obtained. That final report is completed and was agreed in principle by the GAC. But the GAC, of course, reserved their position to review it in total with the final total framework. So our next topic that we covered was significantly interested parties, and that's been through its consultation processes and is in the process of a final report being prepared. We're currently working on the topic of revocation or unconsented redelegations, and we'll cover a bit more of that in a moment. And as a continuing process through our work, we are building a comprehensive glossary of terms. So what we're hoping for there is that IANA will use a consistent set of wordings so that they are not subject to various interpretations, that they are highly descriptive and appropriate to the subject of delegation and redelegation. Then finally, we'll have a more process-driven report for IANA on how it might implement the framework after our work on the framework itself is completed. Since Toronto, we've met six times. We were interrupted by that period of late December and January and February with various festive seasons and New Year's and so on. So even though it was a long gap between Toronto and now, we were only able to manage six meetings. We usually meet every 2 weeks. We've published a progress report on our activity since Toronto, and we're still working on the topic of revocation. The revocation topic has been probably the most difficult topic we've confronted, and our work now is probably 9 months on 9 months old on this topic. I think have reached a point in the working group where we agree in principle. We have agreed the principles of what a revocation might mean under RFC 1591 and what substantial misbehaviour might lead to a revocation, but we haven't been able to agree a final text, and we've been around a number of iterations of various texts. texts. My feeling is that we won't achieve a unanimous decision of the working group, but in the interests of moving on, I think we have to agree here in Beijing to at least the consensus view of the working group on that topic and move on. Otherwise, we'll stall forever if we try and include everybody. But we have worked exhaustively to try and include everybody's viewpoint and come up with a suitable text that everyone can live with. So the final topic, the final report on consent is there at that link, and it will be included as a chapter in the final FOI report to the CCNSO and the GAC. The status on SIP I've already covered, the status on revocation. If we can get through this issue of revocation here in Beijing and perhaps a tidy up on one more call, then I think we can start the public consultation prior to ICANN Durban. And our meeting here in Beijing is a three-hour meeting on Thursday, and I think it is not actually function room 11. I think it's function room 10, or at least that's what the current schedule says, Gabby, so correct me if I'm wrong. As I said, the
11.
It's definitely 11. It's showing on the main schedule as 10, so if we could have it corrected on the main schedule.
Yes, it's been moved to 10.
It's moved to 10?
Yeah.
Okay, so thank goodness we've got clarity. So room 10 for the working group members, and of course observers are always welcome at our meeting. If you're having trouble sleeping, please come along and join us. That's it. Progress reports, all of our reporting is included at that link, and if you do want to raise any topics or issues with us not in public, please feel free to email myself or Bernie, and those are our email addresses. And with that, that's our report, and any questions?
Thank you very much, Keith. Bernie, you're amazingly silent. To chip in if you need to. Any comments or questions? Nope. Excellent. Okay. Let's move on then. Thank you. Thank you very much. Okay, so we were due to move on to the study group on the use of country names and territories. But I'm aware that Paul Schindler is dialing in for that item. So what I suggest is we slightly rejig the schedule and get Bart up for the update from the council workshop, which was Sunday, which feels like an awful long time ago already. So if you join the council, you need to be aware that sometimes your Sundays get hijacked for a council workshop. But we had a very good workshop on Sunday and thought that we would share with you the outcomes of that. Some of them were mentioned at the board update just now for obvious reasons. But
At the council meeting, I don't have slides, so I'll do it quickly. At the council meeting, there were four topics discussed. One is, as you may know, the council had appointed a study group to look at the election guidelines of the CCNSO, election guidelines relating to the election of councillors and the election of board members. And as you may have noted, there were some issues at the latest council elections. The council discussed whether there needs to be a further look at some of the underlying principles, and at the upcoming council meeting there will be a formal study group established to really look into the use of quora and in the different election guidelines and in the bylaws itself, and to understand if it's still useful in the current context of the CCNSO. So that was one bit. The second bit is, again, there was a study group from the council looking into the balancing the workload of the CCNSO and the participation of the volunteers, because that's an issue, as you may have heard this morning at the board CC&SO meeting. This study group came up with a set of recommendations. The first set has been already discussed at the Prague meeting, and that's more into to increase active participation of the volunteers. This will result in an update of the guidelines on establishing working groups. A second part of that council study group recommendations is to set up what is called a triage committee. This will look into the public the request for comments, etc., that are reaching the CC&SO. To date, we do not have a method to deal with them systematically. So that's the first step. Initially, it will look less, it will increase the workload, but at least we have a real overview of what is requested from the CC&SO and what the CC&SO is supposed to do. So in order to address this, the study group also has advised the council to start prioritizing the workload of the CC&SO, and has proposed a very simple method for prioritization, which, as Leslie pointed out, is based on what is called the Eisenhower matrix, and it's very simple. A priority is there if a item is urgent and important, but there is an additional criteria for prioritization is what is the capacity needed, how many volunteers do we need to do anything, what is the skill set required, and the second one, which is probably the showstopper, is this capacity available, yes or no, and that will be taken into consideration in the prioritization model. So the council discussed this and in principle agreed to the triage committee and the work process. So at its meeting, it will update the work plan guidelines to include a reference to the triage committee and the prioritization model. And as a result, we had a discussion on the upcoming workload for the upcoming 1 or 2 years. So what we can see happening, and one of them is probably a scary one, is a PDP, and this one on the retirement of a CCTLD, but that is scheduled for the moment the FOI has concluded its work, and then we go into the next phase because that was one of the recommendations of the DRD working group. So that's a main work item that we can foresee in the future. And the final part of the council workshop is once a year the council reviews its own roles and responsibilities and appoint people to the different council tasks. So that includes obviously chairing the meeting, but there are some internal committees as well. Say in this case, one example is the triage committee, but also dealing with the applications for new members, etc. These will be, it has been revisited and will be on the council agenda on Wednesday. That was my update from the council workshop.
Okay, thank you, Bart. And for colleagues' information, if you are interested in this particularly, if you go to the CC&SO website, look under quick links and guidelines, you can find all of the mind maps and detail and the updated versions, etc. So the material is there. If you'd like to have an exploration, you would be very welcome. Any questions or comments, please? No? Okay. Now, this is where we run into a sort of a problem because...
Oh, we've got Paul on the line.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for your flexibility, Paul. And sorry you're not here with us in person. We're moving on then to Paul Schindler. Update from the working group on the use of country names and territories.
Thank you, Leslie, and apologies to everyone if I couldn't be there in person. Leslie, could you just confirm that the room can hear me properly?
We can hear you, Paul. Thank you.
Wonderful. Thank you. Again, apologies, I'm not there in person. It is due to the impending birth of our third child, and just serves to show the lengths one must go to get leave from work from Chris. But that said, I just wanted to provide a very quick update on where the study group is at. I apologise, I don't have any slides given the remote participation. I thought that would be a bit impractical. In summary, the study group, the end is nigh for the study group. We've concluded the three main phases of our work. We've drafted and discussed internally a final report, and we're now at that final stage of gaining a bit more broader community input and delivering our final report to council. I'm conscious that various CC members may come in and out and participate in some meetings and not in others, so please bear with me with a little bit of history on the study group. We officially kicked off our work back as far as December 2010, but after drawing in community members from across ICANN and coercing me to be chair, we really got underway in mid-2011. And the main scope of our work came from a recognition that country and territory names have been discussed roundabout ways and have been part of various policy processes for many years, but there was no cross-constituency study or analysis as to how they're used. And it was in recognition of that, and also in recognition that it was not appropriate to be within the scope of the IDN CCPDP, that this study group was set up. So basically what we've done over the last couple of years is looked at three things. The way country and territory names are used within ICANN now, so how IANA uses them, nothing intersecting with the FOI working group, but just as a factual analysis back to the ISO documents of how those names are defined and used, how they were used in the new GTLD process, first round, etc. Then we looked at the types of strings and country names that are used and moved on to issues that might arise when you take the current policies, you mash them up against how they might be the types of strings that exist out there, and are there any problems? Are there any issues that arise when these policies are applied? Part of our final report, which is still in its draft format, states that we're not about looking at what is or is not a country or territory. This group is not tasked with identifying a definite instruction for how they should be used in future. We are by name a study group, and that's exactly what we're doing with the aim of providing some advice to council. Our report basically summarises all the work that we did, which included gathering evidence from member states of UNESCO via a survey process and then just internal deliberations within the study group. I would like to share that there are a few preliminary recommendations that we've worked on, but these are very preliminary, and they essentially say that this is an incredibly complex area. There has never been any overarching approach to how country names and territory names are treated. It's of great interest to the CCNSO and obviously to governments in the GAC and the GNSO by association with the new GTLD process. We've identified the fact that individual lists or resources are inevitably bound to fail if you want to use a set finite list to define what is or is not a country or territory. It's an inflexible approach. And the ICANN's current policies and procedures don't necessarily afford consistent treatment. We're being very careful with our wording there because, again, this is not intended to be a criticism of a particular policy process. We've noted what has gone on in the drafting that's occurred in the applicant guidebook and where that is up to, and also made special reference to the fast track and IDN CC policy and that they're restricted and that they have very specific restrictions. I predict at this stage that our group will discuss the penultimate version of its final report on Thursday at our session, 8 a.m. after the gala for all of you there in Beijing. And then after that, we will look at circulating it more broadly amongst the community and getting that to the CCNSO Council as soon as possible. I currently predict, and again, this is simply a preemptive thing, that we may be looking at recommendations that result in extensions of the current rules for excluding country and territory names from the applicant guidebook. And this is not a carte blanche reservation. It is based on the acknowledgement that we don't have accurate and uniform definitions of country and territory names, and that therefore it's quite likely this study group could, for better or for worse, spin off into a subsequent working group which is tasked with resolving those issues that are outside of our mandate. I just wanted to share that with the room specifically so that CCNSO participants and the council can get a feel for where the study group is going to and what we will deliver within the next month or so. But again, I stress and emphasise that that is very preliminary. So that essentially is my report.
Okay, thank you, Paul. Is the intent to come to Durban for a discussion on the way forward?
At this stage, the casual term would be we're playing it by ear. Yes, there would be some need. Our intention is to have this draft final report finished very, very soon after Beijing. It is just a case of working group members, study group members, agreeing on the final content. Some of whom, of course, are from other parts of the community, and they have been sharing this out already. We really need to take the temperature of the room and see how people are going with it and whether there is agreement, concern. And again, we will see how that goes. But if needs be, we're perfectly happy to discuss that and brief the community more broadly in Durban, or it may well be a formal presentation of the final report.
Okay, thank you. Any questions or comments for Paul, please? Maybe can I just test the level of interest in this issue, which will help us in sorting out how much time to allow it in Durban. Cards, high interest, don't really mind. We have some good people on the working group, so I'm happy. How does everyone feel? I thought so. Some mixed views. Yeah. Okay. I think this is one that, from my perspective, feels quite difficult to get into, so I'm very relieved that we have the working group operating, and we need to do some work as to how we explain it and iterate the comments to those who haven't been directly involved. And that's not a criticism, Paul. We've just been very happy to leave it in your capable hands. Okay.
I understand. Thank you, Leslie. Yes, unfortunately, it's a shame I don't have the opportunity to present it here more extensively, but we've been very conscious of engaging the community as much as possible throughout the process. Our colleagues of the CCNSO will see a final report very soon, and then again, depending upon how people feel and the level of comfort amongst the community, we'll do everything we need to and are asked to in terms of explaining it to everyone else.
Thank you, Paul. We had a mixed sort of green and I'm not sure colour cards. I think there weren't no's, so that's good. Okay,
I'm still not sure. Thank you.
Thank you, and best wishes for your new arrival. And don't forget to get their domain name.
I certainly will. Thank you.
Thank you, Paul. Okay, so now then, we've made lots of space to come back to the money discussion to finance. Byron, are you still here? Yes. So whilst Byron's coming up, let me just remind you, we have this one that we have made space for until 12:45. At 12:45, we'll be joined by ARI Registry Services, I suspect by the one and only Adrian Kinseris, who will present to us. They are sponsoring lunch for us today. There will be a limited number of lunch tickets, I'm afraid, and they will be available at the door, as we usually do at the end of that presentation. We are going to come back for 2:00, And I know you know how keen we are to start on time. 2 o'clock is relaxed, can I just say, because we have had to lend our room to somebody else for a closed meeting until just before two. So 2 o'clock would be fine, and we would be good to lend our room out during that period. Meanwhile, Byron, back to our discussion from this morning. I've heard a number of comments from people who I do hope you will feel able to comment to the room as well now.
So I guess we can pick up where we left off. There were a number of comments on the conversation, and feedback seemed to be getting going. Does anybody have any further comments, questions, after some period of reflection, albeit brief?
Hi.
My name is Carlos from Nick Argentina. And earlier before I was talking with Leslie because of the, you know, we fall in the B category, the amount of domain names you have, but we have this special situation. We don't charge our domains, we're for free. So we're not really sure when where we're standing right now, you know. So this is going to change further this year, maybe in a couple of months, but we're still not sure about much, you know. So we're kind of lost in this. Just as we wanted to know what will happen if this model succeeds.
Sorry, just let me clarify. You give away all domain names?
Yes.
Okay. Don't tell anybody in Canada that.
One size does not fit all, I think.
Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, we, in a sense, we're hearing different iterations of a common theme, which is I have a different variation perhaps on the model and how will the bands fit in my model, right? Whether I have a relationship with ICANN that's almost like a contracted party or has some defined payment plan or free domains, which presumably leads to, I have to admit, I don't know how many are in your, how many domains you have under management right now, but I would assume quite a few if they're free.
Almost 3 million.
Right. Okay. So that's quite a few. I think the underpinning of the basic framework is it's voluntary. And that's the escape valve for us all, that if we have a model that is not similar to the majority, and I would say here's a perfect case, the majority don't just give away all domain names. And I'm not questioning the model, I'm just saying it's different from the majority of us who do charge something. And in order to provide a way forward for all of us who are somewhat different from the average, that's why we're going with voluntary. That's why we are going, or believe we will end up with bands that are guidelines, not requirements, and therefore give the flexibility to pay at different rates. I mean, we encourage it that, you know, here's a band. If you're in it, here's a reasonable number. We would encourage you to be in that band. However, since it's voluntary, you have the option to select another point on the spectrum that would reflect or recognize the fact that you have a model that's further away from the average. So that's how I envision it at this point.
Okay. Of course, this is going to change this year, but we don't know how it's going to work out. No, just we'll see throughout this year. So
welcome, Carlos, and thank you for adding that comment.
Yeah,
I think it's going to be incredibly helpful for us to have a narrative around why it's not as straightforward as it may look to some people. And we have always said one size does not fit all. And that is a fantastic example of this. So well done for speaking up and welcome.
Okay, thank you.
I had David and then Patricio in the queue, and then Peter.
Coincidence. Dave Archibald from Cayman Islands. We don't charge for our domains either, so that's two down. No, my real question was on your diagram, or the chart that you had up, you showed a figure at the bottom for the total number of registries that we're currently paying. Might it be helpful to show how that is split amongst the different tiers?
Yes, it's certainly possible. I mean, we have that information and can provide, although I don't have it right here now.
It just for, you know, when we are looking at what the likely consequences are, it might be helpful.
Absolutely. Wait a sec, doesn't Frank Schilling live in your neighborhood? Yes. You should be charging for those domain names. I know he's got some money.
I think that there is an interesting diversion, so apologies, as to how you then fund your salary, unless this is also free. Where there is a free model, there must be some revenue somewhere funding activities. But that's a bit of a digression. So, but it would be useful to understand so that we can add colour to the narrative. Yeah. Patricio?
Yeah. About the same thing. Being next door to Argentina, we certainly hear from time to time from some of our users, why can't you give domains for free as they do in Argentina? And the fact is that these are different funding models. We fund all our operations out of what we collect from our users as domain registrations and renewals. And while in Argentina, their operation is funded by the government, and I understand that comes from historical reasons, and from time to time it's been a political decision of the government to give domains to the people for free. But that means that there has to be a revenue source somewhere, because in Argentina they do not get electricity for free or computers for free or programmers and other staff for free, nor do they get free air tickets to come to ICANN meetings. All those things cost money, right? And there has to be a budget, and somebody has to provide for that, and I assume it's the Argentina government. So if we have some sort of agreement in the community that we need to contribute to some degree to fund what some of these costs are, what I would assume is that their budget would have to have another line for what their estimate of the fair contribution to that is, and the same sort of funding that they have now would have to cover for that. So in that sense, I don't immediately buy an argument that says since we charge zero, then our contribution should be zero, because that's not true for all the other expenses that a domain that has that business model, and it's not only Argentina. We've heard of another new TLD this week that has offering free domains, and I assume their business model will somehow provide for whatever cost to participate in the ICANN process.
Yeah, I mean, we're all operators. What we do doesn't come free. So behind each of us, there has to be some revenue model, whether we charge explicitly for the sale of a domain or we're receiving revenues from some other body, government, academic, whatever it is. And potentially, a contribution to ICANN is like any other line item. It is just simply an expense. The difference is there's a little more flexibility that you get to, in a sense, have a say in what that expense line item should be. and there's some flexibility in terms of the range. If you are within the band, that's what we're suggesting. We're not there yet in terms of giving concrete guidance, but there would be a range within each band. And, of course, depending on your model, you may elect to choose a different band. And that's why we're going to give guidance, but it's not we're not dictating a particular place on the spectrum, although we would probably be in the strongly encourage part of the spectrum. So it's very interesting to hear, like, for us, even though you saw the size of the working group, we have a pretty varied group, but nonetheless, it doesn't mean we have every possible conceivable type of CC represented there. So it's very interesting for us to hear these examples, too. Mm. So please keep them coming if you have something outside the average.
And I guess the working group was seeing this as a way to breaking down, sharing out the cost, as opposed to a prescriptive model.
Right, and we are in the delicate balance here. I mean, let's call a spade a spade. What we are funding here, in a sense, is a common good that we all have a role or in engaging and generating the expenses behind this number. And in some way, shape, or form, the tide that rises on a well-run ICANN is of benefit to us all. So I think whether we charge explicitly for domains or not, whether we're large or small, wealthier or less wealthy, you know, it behooves us all to get behind this a number and support it to the best of your ability. And that's really what the Finance Working Group is coming down to. It's a recommendation, it's a strong encouragement, but it's a reflection of to the best of your ability.
Okay, so I had Peter, and could I also encourage anyone who hasn't spoken? I think it's really important that we have a good feel for how CCs feel about this issue. You know, as we highlighted earlier, there's been some breakthroughs, but if we, the next stage of the discussion is just as important. That we develop something that we are comfortable with going forward. Peter.
PeterVergotte.be. Before making my comment, let me add to that, Leslie. I think you're absolutely right, because now that ICANN has come up with a number, I think the ball has been returned to our side of the game, and there is no possible escape from it. We as a community need to dig into this, get to the nitty-gritty detail, and in the end come up with a solution. So I copy that, and I back you up all the way that we need engagement for the whole group in order to get us to the next level. Now, coming back to my comment, I absolutely like the idea of the fee bands being guidelines rather than requirements, and in essence all contributions stay or obtain a voluntary character. But is that not somehow conflicting with the anticipations of ICANN that we finally get to that 3.7 million? Now, how are we going to breach that possible, and I even not sure whether there is a true conflict in between those, but there is a tension field, and should we not try to figure out how to deal with that? I would think it's pretty unimaginable that ICANN would say, well, you know, that 3.7 million is what we calculated what it would cost, but if you do not actually reach up to the full 100% of that contribution, we can live with it. But I don't think that ICANN will ever commit to that or speak out any support for that. But is there a way that we can get a sense of feeling how tight this 3.7 figure is for ICANN as a means to add to their working means?
I certainly don't speak for ICANN, But I've been in pretty regular dialogue with their CFO, and so is the whole working group, as well as Fadi on the subject. I think my sense is they're looking for us to provide a framework that could deliver that number if we all participated. I think there's an implicit recognition that it's unlikely that everybody will participate. And therefore, while a framework that could deliver the 3.7 is what is required, there was a general recognition that in a voluntary model with a wide diversity of registries, not everybody will be able to commit to a one-size-fits-all framework, even though there's lots of wiggle room within the model. I would be surprised if they expected 3.7 to be delivered next year. But what they are going to want to see is our commitment to try to get there and to provide a framework that if everybody were to participate, that is the number that would be the end outcome. And I think that also merits a further point is there's been no suggestion per se that today we pay 1.7 and in fiscal 2013-14 we go straight to 3.7. Part of the discussion is what a phase-in or transition would look like. And we don't have the answer there yet. So there would be a period where we would phase this in, help us get comfortable with it, allow us as operators to plan for it, et cetera.
I think the other thing to add to that response is there were previous discussions about dollar signs and how much you contributed and whether you had paid or not and so on. I think there is a much more mature discussion going on now, and particularly a greater recognition of the value that CCs bring generally to ICANN. And that is why the point earlier about the timing that Annabeth made was very important. So the role that CCs bring to the wicket debate, etc. And there are dollar signs around that potentially, but CCs are delivering that work. We're not charging ICANN for that work. So there is a much more mature discussion around shared value and partnership, which is why it's a good time if we can to bring this particular discussion to a close. And I think there is a great deal of realism in the ICANN board that it may take some time to get to that level. And in fact, ICANN expenses will change significantly with the number of new Gs anyway. And I'm hoping that costs will be spread over a broader number of TLDs more generally that may actually take that number down. Sorry, Vika? Peter, sorry, did you finish? Yeah, okay, thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Leslyn and Byron. I'm a member of the Finance Working Group, sorry, on Sunday for various reasons I couldn't attend. I probably just make general comments of whatever decisions we may make regarding this matter. There are still questions that will arise that will always be a challenge both to the CNSO and to ICANN from a budget point of view. I'm aware of a situation where certain CCTLDs contribute to this cost and others don't. And it becomes a norm over time that, you know, there are those that contribute and those that do not. So there, I think, needs to be an honest, deeper look into the subject from each CNSO member in terms of what they can contribute. I understand that the banded model could be the solution because at least there's an entry fee. But, and yes, I would like to see a situation where we have almost every member contributing as much as they could. I take Patricio's point quite strongly of saying that for some, not all, probably for the majority of those that may offer free domains or even charged domains, but the zone is still small, there is some form of funding they receive that keeps them going, not just from the domain names. And therefore, there may be a need for them to try and filter in into those budgets the contribution to the CNSO. Otherwise, if we don't take that approach, the danger is that we will find even the members that contribute being discouraged from contributing, you know, and feel like, I mean, come on, I've been contributing since 2002, you know, and it's like a drain that or a drum of water that just doesn't get full because others are not contributing. We had a scenario where we've contributed to ICANN in the past, though we ceased temporarily for the last 2 years for the various reasons, and we will continue this year. And we contributed at that time when we were not receiving fees from domain names. We were just receiving funding from government. So I think that's, and maybe in closing also, the fact that maybe we may need to find a way from an ICANN point of view, of thinking up benefits of some form for those CCs that contribute, so that while it is not punitive to those who don't contribute, but it is encouraging to those that do contribute to continue contributing. Thank you.
Thanks, Rika. That's an interesting point, sort of a membership has its privileges. You know, we have certainly had the discussion within the finance working group about how do you encourage, do you strongly encourage, do you have some kind of name and shame regime? I mean, we've talked about many different options, how voluntary is voluntary. So we have had that dialogue at some length internally and reflect Vika's exact comments. It's still a work in progress on that front, and I and we are very open to any ideas that people have about how do you encourage the maximum number of participants to actually participate in the funding model.
But I think there is a note of caution that we have compared to some other communities within ICANN. We have incredibly good relationships within this community, and it would be terrible if the approach to this destroyed some of those relationships. So there is a difference between can pay and haven't got round to it yet, or can pay but just aren't going to, and I haven't got any money so I can't pay at all. It's a very broad range. Carlos.
Yeah, I think I had a clarification only. I wasn't asking not paying. I was just, that's what you were saying. No, I just wanted to know what will happen or what may happen. Just that, because I think some might understood wrong what I said. I just wanted to know what may happen. I wasn't saying we will not pay, or we weren't saying we need to pay less or anything. You know. Just that. Thank you.
We understood that. We're just intrigued as to how free works. But we need to get a presentation on this sometime. No, but maybe sometimes we find registrars in the UK give domains for free, and then they're not valued, they're not renewed, people don't value them because they're free. So, okay. Anyone else who hasn't commented yet? It's really important that we hear from everyone.
And also particularly if you have a business model that we haven't heard about yet and maybe we're not factoring into our thinking. If there's anybody out there who has something unique on that front, we'd also like to hear about that.
Just a comment, actually. Since now it's 74 contributing, is that a number? Today,
for the data, yes, that ICANN has made available to date, it's the most recent, 2011, I think.
But even if we put the number, the bottom number of contribution, very low, I think it will help for the appearances that we can increase that number. So even if it's a very small amount, it will help. Even if you can't pay and won't pay a lot of money, so it would help for the image we are giving that we can raise the number, in my view.
And just on the data front, because we know we have, what are we up to, 137 36 members and you see only 74 here. Just to be clear, the 136 is a very current, up-to-date number, and this is a 2011 number. So it's not quite apples to apples, though your point is certainly valid.
To make it a bit more complicated, say I've been on the receiving end of this. There are some CCTLDs who are not member of the CCNSO who contribute. They have an exchange of letters or an accountability framework. And there are even CCTLDs who are neither CCNSO member or have an exchange of letters or accountability who pay. So it's very, as Byron said and as Leslie said, it's very, very diverse.
Anyone else?
Brenny Fritchie, UK. I just have a question because it seems that there are a number of people in different categories, and whether they're charging, not charging, for-profit, not-for-profit, it would be helpful if the group could do a little further analysis as to how many are in the different categories that don't easily fit into the bounds, because I'm not suggesting a more complicated measuring system. But I can see that it would be uncomfortable for members to self-select into another band and begin to feel not like a full citizen of the group because they were shifting themselves when others didn't understand why they were shifting themselves. And if we could make it a little more transparent so that if people are funded in different ways, we could help to understand what would be a helpful way for people to contribute what they can. Otherwise, suspicions enter. Distrust rather than trust enters the room, and people begin to look at each other differently. We pay more than you pay. My dad's bigger than your dad. And that would not be helpful in this kind of constituency. So some further analysis and then some help for those who are in the different groupings to look at how they might consider how best to make a calculation rather than just fit into a system that isn't designed for them and be a kind of a lower order. That doesn't feel to me to be a mature thing to do.
Thank you for the feedback. I'm just picturing trying to understand the intricacies of 137 different business models and how you would stride that to try to get to where you're going. Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Demi?
Demi from .br. Very briefly, just to say that I'm quite comfortable with the table, and I think that the exceptions just justify the rule. Then I suppose the group did really a great job on that, and it's very good to have exceptions to the rule because this is a way to justify the rule. Thank you.
Thanks, Demi.
Carolina.
Hi, thank you. I just wanted to say, and I haven't talked to my other regional organization managers and colleagues, but we could, if you develop this broad categorization of three or four broad categories, and then we could help from each region to sort of help you place some of the CCTLDs that we know well in each region into those broad categories. So I think that would alleviate the work, and we could sort of provide some help.
Thank you. I heard some volunteering there.
We like that. Good, good. I have somebody there, and then Hero, and then over on the side here.
Can you just clarify, under the new arrangement, .com are paying at a certain level, and the new GTLDs will be paying, what, $25,000 per annum. Do we know if the .com payment model will change after the introduction of the TLDs?
Well, that's a little bit outside of my domain expertise, but certainly what I understand from the contract, which they've just rejigged, is I don't see that it's changing post new GTLD introduction. I think from everything I've heard, it's going to remain consistent.
And you sound like a great volunteer, David, for the SOP working group looking at the budget some stage. Okay, I had Hero, and then somebody, sorry, whose name I don't know.
Hi, Hero from Japan. I feel I'm happy with the table, and as to the point Peter said some time ago, can we make 3.7 million in total if voluntary contribution is made? Can we see, I think that there are some registries who paid more than the table. So if they remain paid the same amount, so we can make 3.7 million, right? I suspect.
Thank you, Hiro. Was there a question in there, or really was just a comment on the fact that there are a number of folks who actually pay above what we see in the table amount here, and who do it of their own volition? And I guess that's that's an interesting comment in and of itself. The focus thus far, or at least my feel, is the discussion about variations from the band have all been downward. That, of course, as Hiro rightly points out, there's also the opportunity to be a contributor above the band, as some folks already are.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, I'm Jonathan Shea from the .hk, Hong Kong CCTLD, and I'm also hoping to speak on behalf of the Asia-Pacific Top Level Domain Association. I appreciate the breakthrough of the working group in terms of having more concrete numbers and a concrete sort of proposal on the table with a feedback model. In terms of the diversity of the business model, I also want to emphasize in the Asia-Pacific region that we do have a very large or wide ranges of different type of CCTLD, some very small, some very large, some are more mature, some are less mature. And as other friends have pointed out, some of them are actually running by giving out domain names for free. But I also want to point out another dimension to the model, which is the number of domain names. If we are to classify or to define the bands using the number of domain names, I just want to hope that the work group will consider the complexity when it comes to the IDNs. Some of the CCTLD do have their IDN CC, the IDN version of the CCTLD, and some are giving out them for free as well. For example, some are actually bundling the ASCII, CCTLD, and the IDN together, and the registrant will only have to pay for one domain name. I really hope when we consider counting or how to count the number of domain names, that these are also factors that have to be considered. Not to mention that maybe in the Song file, some of the names are not usable at all, for various reasons. For example, they're being reserved, suspended, etc. But some of them are really not usable. So when we come to count the domain names, maybe we should not count them. So I just hope the working group will consider those as well. when you come to working into the detailed implementation of the model. Thank you.
I think that brings up an interesting point, a very interesting point for all of us to consider. If because we have a variation in business models, if we as an individual registry elect to give away our product or double up our product by giving an IDN for free, I mean, that's a business decision that each and every one of us makes. It doesn't necessarily, well, it clearly has, in a sense, no correlation to the fact that ICANN does what it does and we receive those benefits. How we decide to implement our own business model is our own business, but it is separate and distinct from the costs incurred by ICANN to support this community and the benefits that we enjoy based on ICANN's efforts. And the IDN one is a complex issue and a reasonable one to bring up, just as a counterpoint, because we've wrestled with a number of these issues in the finance working group. Within this room, how many registries have actually benefited from the effort and time and expense that ICANN and this group have incurred supporting the IDN process? Right, there's many registries here who receive no benefit from that. But as a collective, we still believe that it's worth investing in that as a collective expense number. So, I mean, there's a flip side to your point, too. And I don't say it to argue directly with you. I just say it's one of the many issues that makes it difficult to try to reconcile 137 variations on a business model with one framework to generate $3.7 million or whatever that number ends up being negotiated. And I don't say that as a direct argument with you. I'm just, it's one more good point that's being made that shows the complexity of trying to find a resolution to this issue.
Stephen
Erhick.as, American Samoa. On a slightly different tact, currently there are several CCs, three of which really are quite rather large, under actual contractual obligations with ICANN involving financial contributions, et cetera. And I was wondering if during the course of the group's discussions that has come up, and specifically in the context of if, to use a phrase popular in the U.S. these days, a grand bargain is achieved with respect to funding along the span level or whatever else might be the grand bargain, what impact, if any, there might be on those contracts? Perhaps they would be released from their financial obligations to go down the contributory path outlined in the grand bargain, or has there been any discussion, work, et cetera, on that, just out of curiosity?
There's certainly been no discussion about whatever the result of this process is, releasing CCs from any obligation they have themselves incurred with ICANN. I would imagine it would become a point of discussion. We're certainly aware of it in the finance working group, but to us, those are specific one-to-one arrangements that have been made and not under the purview of trying to create a framework for the broad community. Is that, I mean, that's as close to an answer as I can give you. If you have a contract with ICANN, then it's two parties who made a contract. This is not releasing you from that. But I think it's safe to say that we have a moment in time where we are trying to achieve a grand bargain, to use your phrase. And that's probably a moment in time to try to level set the playing field.
But I think it does go to the earlier point that one size quite clearly does not fit all. And apart from developing illustrative bands and so on, there is a need for a narrative that says one size does not fit all, particularly for this community. There is this model, there is that model, and giving some colour to the variety that we have in this community. Okay. Anyone else very important. We've hear from everyone as much as we can. If you've not spoken and want some time to think further, the list of the working group members was displayed earlier and is on the website. Please get in touch with a working group member or feed in your views and your thoughts through the regional organisations. We don't mind what route they come, but it's important that the working group hear, because as you will have gathered, this is a very important stage. And if we can get through this and put this to bed, whether it be a grand bargain or whatever we're calling it, that would be a major milestone for this community and for ICANN. Any closing comments, Byron?
Yeah, I'm going to start using the grand bargain from now on. I like that. That's a good phrase. You know, to some degree, it's legitimate. We are trying to find a solution to solve a problem that's been ongoing for a very long time, and depending on how you look at it, from the dawn of time in terms of this organization. And in terms of time, I would argue we have a moment in time where ICANN is fertile ground for resolution. We have a leader who wants a resolution and has a willingness to compromise here. And I think it's really in our interest for us to find our way to the solution here and be okay with it, even if it's not always perfect for every single individual. And I would ask you just to consider that as we move forward here. And between here and Durban, please provide us with any feedback that you think is relevant or warranted to help us in our discussions as we go forward. So, and thanks for all the feedback today. We've learned today, so that's exactly what we were hoping to get from today. Thanks.
Thank you, everybody, for that conversation. Really good, and really good work from the working group. Okay. Ooh, the promises you keep. Okay, that's a song title, isn't it? Adrian, we're delighted to welcome you to the CCNSO, and thank you so much for sponsoring lunch. That's much appreciated. Welcome, and over to you.
Thank you. Wow, that's loud. Good afternoon. The old cliche, I stand between you and lunch. I'm well aware of that. So we'll make this brief. But you can't get up and go because you haven't got your ticket for your lunch yet. You don't get the tickets till I finish. So I feel like I've got a captive audience. We will get to that. Thank you very much for taking. I know you got a lot on your agenda and are very busy at these meetings. But we wanted to just number one, get you fed. Number two, promote our new DNS service that we're offering. Many of you will be familiar with us. We've been around the CC land for a while, supporting .au on our technical platform, as well as a number of other CC TLDs. Been doing it for, God, it feels like ever, you know, 10 or so years. So we're pretty familiar with your needs and requirements, and given the evolution of our organization and the offering that we have, we're now enhancing that, and I wanted to just brief you on it today. And this won't be a long presentation, but bear with me. I am the good looks of the organization. My name is Adrian Kinderis. The brains is next to me here. He is Chris Wright, my CTO. So if your question is of a technical nature, it will be answered to my left. If it's of a nice, fluffy marketing-style question, I'll be sure to answer it. So please feel free to ask anything along the way. We'll be happy to. That's my Twitter account as well, folks. Get that and see what I have for breakfast every morning. It's entertaining. All right. So we wanted to start off by highlighting really what happens in an internet minute. We did want to show a video, but legal restrictions stopped us from doing so. We put this one up. I know it's really hard to read, but the point is here that a lot happens on the internet now. It is ingrained in our lives, not just from a from day-to-day business, but from our personal lives. Every moment of our day, we're in some way interacting. So it's become very, very important to all of us, a lot of the times without even thinking about it. So there's some interesting stats on here. I won't go through them, but we'll make this slide deck available, or at least if you do a Google search, you'll find that that it's a pretty cool slide. So with the growth of the internet comes a couple of things. Number one is responsibility. And number two, accountability. Responsibility in the fact that the internet, as I said, is now integrated into billions of lives. All of us are responsible for that integration in this room. And accountability. For those people that register names within our namespaces, we have a responsibility to keep those namespaces running, to keep those domain names running. So we call it a promise. And part of what we do in running our technical services is to make sure that we would like to assist you in keeping that promise. So we'll talk a little bit about that. So it used to be about the number of domains in your space that made you important. And I think we've evolved out of that. It's now about what's running on those domain names that's important. So as I say, it's less about the number of domains in your team, more about the domains that are being used. And we've got a couple of examples here. If people's banking every day. If your websites go down, that banking doesn't occur. Not so much about Google stopping them from making billions of dollars off us. Maybe we could have dropped them off the slide. But if they went away, we'd feel it. So as I say, it's more about what's on your in your namespace rather than the number of names in your namespace that's becoming more and more important as this internet becomes more ingrained in our lives. So as I say, old thinking, size is the winner here. When you get to a certain size, now I need to make sure that my system is robust. It's simply not the truth anymore. We need to be robust out of the gate, right? We need to make sure that our offering is solid, that we have redundancy, that our registries are up and running because of what is running on those few names that we might have. So a little bit about .au, and I do see Joe Lim in the audience from .au, so some of this may be factual, Joe, some may not. I'm saying that in advance. Is she there? Hi, Joe. Good. Okay, she's telling me to shut up. So we've seen a 600% increase in .au since 2002. We saw a significant increase in DNS traffic as a result, of course. And while the demands of the internet grew, so did the scrutiny on how our DNS was being operated. So we sort of had a bit of an evolution in the way that we managed our DNS, and that's what we wanted to talk about today. So we adapted. .au originally had its name servers managed by a volunteer community, and a lot of you will be familiar with this evolution. It's generally the way that namespaces were introduced. Then with regulation came more rules around that DNS and understanding that it was important. And so we enhanced the volunteers and we created our own internal DNS service to manage that. That's expensive to deploy your own. And so we outsourced the next step of that. As the namespace grew, we outsourced those services to someone who specifically performed that function. And then once it became financially feasible for us to do so, we rolled out our own DNS and moved all of the domain names onto our own platform. So we think this is a typical evolution of a namespace, and all of you will be along here somewhere. And really it comes down to a number of factors as to why you would want to change. So let's talk about that barrier to change. It's our job to help you remove them, and we think that we've created a couple of nice efficient points to do so. The three major barriers when we've gone out and spoken to the CC community is really around cost, transparency, and trust. And I just wanted to talk about those very, very quickly. I can see some stomachs rumbling, getting some evil looks. I'm getting there. It's not long to go. So our product is based around those three principles, and hope you'll see that we've responded and hopefully made it easier for you in understanding how they can get integrated. We're seeing DNS differently than what you've probably been used to with respect to an external provider. So, Chris, I'm going to hand over to you now, if you don't mind, to run through the three pillars for us.
Sure, no problems. So, as Adrian mentioned, being a CCTLD provider that outsourced their DNS at one point in time we have a really good understanding of what it means to make that decision to decide to take that important part of your namespace and outsource it somewhere else. And we found that the providers that were available at the time when we were outsourcing our DNS didn't really understand those things and weren't really able to address these things for us. But we were forced into a situation where we had to do that. The demands that our users were placing on us, our infrastructure wasn't able to keep up with and wasn't adequate and didn't meet their expectations. And we simply didn't have the money at that point in time to invest in rolling out a large-scale network all around the world. Luckily, we have now. So those three barriers that you have, the cost barrier, the biggest problem with cost in outsourcing DNS is that most of the providers today don't align the way that they charge you for their DNS services with the way that you typically earn revenue. Most of them typically have query-based models where predicting the money that you have to pay each month is difficult. And you can find yourself in a financially risky situation where if you experience any sort of DDoS attack or anything like that, you can have large bills to pay each month based on the traffic that you experience. So we addressed that. We've priced our DNS service simply based on the number of domain names that are in there. You guys typically charge for a domain name per year and so forth. This simply allows you to take our pricing, bundle that into your domain name charges, and away you go. There's no risk. There's no excess charges for excess queries. There's no excess charges for resource records or any other of these wonderful things that the other providers try to get in there. But we've taken the cost thing and made it purely predictable and easy to manage. Trust is obviously another big factor. It's very, very difficult to be comfortable taking something as precious as your DNS and give it to some other external organization and say, run this for me, please. I mean, at the end of the day, DNS is what we all do. That's why we're here. So we're trying to demonstrate that we're trustworthy. And we're doing that in a number of different ways. First of all, we have the experience, we have the credentials. We're here. You've seen us. You know who we are. We know who we're around. We've been around. But that's not necessarily enough. So the easiest way to build trust is to be open and honest about things, and to give people the visibility of what's going on. It's something else that we found a lot of the providers lacked when we were trying to outsource. It was very, very difficult to get access to packet captures of your queries. And one could question, you know, is that because I'm charged by the number of queries that I have? And, you know, so we've taken a different approach. We're taking a full disclosure approach. We'll provide every piece of information that you require. We'll tell you where our servers are. We'll tell you what operating systems they run. We'll tell you what brand and model they are. We'll tell you what versions of Bind or NSD or other DNS software that they're using. We'll tell you who our upstreams are, how much bandwidth each location has, what the utilization of those servers are at that point in time, and the list goes on and on and on. We have all technical documentation available for anyone to scrutinize that's interested in using the service. We give you access to the entire raw packet captures of all your queries. You can download those packet captures and do whatever you want with them, run any sort of analysis. You're not constrained by whatever our reporting system enables you to look at. You can run whatever analysis you want across those packet captures. We give looking glasses at all of our network locations to our customers, so you can see what the internet looks like from all of our different DNS spots, and for the technical people among you, that's an important thing. And we make sure that all of our DNS servers are individually, that make up our Anycast clouds, are individually addressable so that you can do your own monitoring and your own checking to see that the services are functioning as expected and so forth. We're not going to hide behind an Anycast address. We'll tell you everything, where everything is, and disclose everything. Yep. So 475 new DTLD applicants have chosen to trust us to provide them DNS services. So hopefully that's showing you that the service that we've built is one that people are willing to use.
Eventually.
If they get through the program, that's right. Capability goes is another long way to making you comfortable to outsource your DNS services. And this is the one that all DNS service providers will generally be able to meet. So all the typical things that you'd expect are there. We're ISO certified, we take security seriously, we're active participants in DNS forums, we have over 10 years experience running DNS systems, whether they're in-house or outsourced. We've had 100% uptime for .au DNS since the beginning. We've never had a problem. Full DNSSEC signing capabilities as well. The other part of our service that we think is appealing to ccTLDs is that if you haven't made the jump to DNSSEC yet, we can take care of that for you. We'll transfer your zones in unsigned, sign them for you, and distribute them to our network, and basically take the entire hassle of managing DNSSEC away from you, so you don't have to worry about it. So for those ccTLDs that are interested, that's parts there. And of course, you've got all the normal technical features that everybody has. There are locations around the world at the moment where our servers are located.
These I should jump in. These sites were chosen largely because that's where I want a holiday. So there's no don't ask as to why we chose specific locations, other than that that's really my world tour, and there are T-shirts available. So that's a joke,
yeah.
And I will not do any more.
And these are the standard other features that you'd expect. It's an Anycast network, DNS sites covering every major continent, DNSSEC signing, IDNs, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You guys know all this stuff. It's all available in our collateral anyway. But
I think the point is here that we don't want to sit here and ram all the technology down your throat. It's important, of course. But we felt that there are a couple of other pillars how we've to build our DNS product around that we felt were important for you. Two slides to go, everybody.
So in summary, let us help you address the challenges and deliver on those promises that you've made. You can leverage our expertise and the investment that we've made in deploying this network to your advantage. And a customized solution is within reach. We can try and help remove those barriers for you, and it may not be as costly as you think it may be.
Speaking of cost, for those of you that managed to stay awake during this presentation, here is an offer that you cannot refuse. I will ensure that. There is a caveat here. For those of you with under 10,000 names within your space, we will offer you 6 months to try the service. We don't believe this has been done for DNS before. We didn't want to offer 1 month. It's a hell of a headache to move your DNS for 1 month to take a look around. So we felt we wanted to make it substantial. So there's 6 months there for you to get on the system and try it out, take it for a walk around the block, tell us what you think. If you're not satisfied, we will... No, I don't know. There's nothing else. So we are throwing in a Lux guide to Beijing that's in front of you all. There is a plus to that. Lastly, Sebastian is over here. Many of you hopefully know Sebastian if he's been doing his job properly. Please provide your feedback to me. Sebastian speaks every language on the planet, I'm told. Is that... Pardon? But Chinese. That would have been helpful here. Sebastian's here. Please go and see him if you have any questions or if indeed you'd like to take us up on the offer. We certainly appreciate your time today, ladies and gentlemen. Leave you with the notion to ensure that you remember your promise. What you do is integral to people's lives. Take it seriously, and of course you do, but sometimes it's easy to forget some of the moving parts, and we want to take that headache away for you and ensure that you offer a robust service out to your end users. Now, for lunch. The lunch for you is held in the Grand Ballroom, Leslie. Tickets are available how? You need to come and see me secretly in a room with a handshake. No, where?
Gabby's on the door.
Oh, there you go. Now, there is a limited number of tickets, apparently, because there are more of you than what they planned. So in a mad rush, if you could run towards the doorway. So there's, I think, a limit to 100. So it is, I was told to say, first come, first serve. And only take one if you're having lunch, please, folks. Thank you very, very much for your time. Appreciate it. Enjoy your lunch.
Thank you. Thank you. Back here for 2 o'clock, please, everybody.